video, we're going to discuss if estrogen cream can make you nauseous. I'm Dr. Davidson.
And I'm Dr. Mackey.
So for this episode, or this video, we're going to do a question from a listener. She's actually a practitioner, and she has a client that's having some problems taking estrogen and experiencing debilitating, as she says, which sounds pretty bad, nausea and vomiting.
Yeah, you know, you've been doing hormone replacement long enough, and you realize there is a lot of a human individuality. Mm-hmm. Some women can transition right into hormones and have no problems, and others, on the other end of the spectrum, seem to, you know, sort of struggle a little bit, which is, you know, it's really hard sometimes, which I can see why Betty is actually reaching out. It can be difficult to find answers to the ones that transition fine, that go on hormones with no problems. Of course, that's easy. But the ones that don't, it can be a little bit difficult. So I can certainly understand where Betty's coming from, which is in some ways why we're doing the podcast in the first place.
Because everybody's different in how you tailor their personal hormone replacement therapy. Sorry, I'm petting the dog here. She really wants to be pet. So that's why my arm's sticking up like this.
it's like reaction.
If I don't pet her, she'll like knock my arm up. But I'm sure everybody else who has a dog experiences the same thing.
we cannot do it without the little co-pilot down there.
Can't do anything without
him. So why don't you go ahead and read the question from Betty.
All right, let me get my glasses on. This year it has turned into the reading glasses. So here we go. Okay, this is from Betty. As I always say, we change their name just for anonymity. So from Betty, I have a patient with a history of a hysterectomy who retains one ovary. She is currently on Biest cream, a 50-50 ratio, 1 milligram daily. She is also on progesterone, 100 to 200 milligrams orally at night. She initially did well, had improved vaginal moisture, great sex, great mood. Now she is experiencing debilitating nausea and vomiting, which she did when she was taking a synthetic estrogen from her gynecologist. Should I maybe reduce her to 0.5 milligrams vaginally 3 times a week? I've never had any patients experience this. By the way, she was not on the progesterone when she was taking the synthetic estrogen, so that's why we think it's the estrogen. Thank you.
Yeah, so you and I discussed this a little bit before we started recording. I mean, she does provide, we are speculating before we actually went back and read the question, mm-hmm. what type of estrogen was she on, you know, because all, as we both know, and I'm sure as Betty does too as the practitioner, that all forms of hormone replacement are not created the same. She says a key thing, synthetic estrogen, so we could assume probably estrogen at that, or a Premarin at that point, probably.
I'm not really sure. I was thinking originally that it might have been an estradiol patch, but which we don't really use a lot just because it's very hard to tailor specific doses for, because like we said, hormone replacement for each person is so individualized. But an estradiol patch actually is bioidentical, so I'm not sure. Maybe it's some kind of birth control? But then that would have maybe some progestin in there. So you're right. I'm not really sure. Or maybe she meant to say an estradiol patch. But either way, when she was on some kind of estrogen prior, no progesterone, she was having nausea and vomiting. Went off of that estrogen, so now she's sneezing. That's so cute.
She's usually napping, and now she's awake, so she's totally disrupting everything. So sorry for the noise going back there, but it is what it is.
She's in charge. But what I was saying, so she wasn't on the progesterone. She was on the estrogen prior, had nausea and vomiting, took her off of that estrogen, put her on a Biest, which is a combination of estriol and estradiol, did well initially, but now that nausea and vomiting is back.
Yeah. So she obviously, and she does make the distinction between synthetic and the Biest. So she obviously understands, the practitioner anyways, understands, you know, the, you know, bioidentical hormone replacement. Now the good thing is she puts in here 50-50 ratio. She puts in the 50-50 ratio and the 1 milligram. So actually gives us the dosage of those two. The patient has had a hysterectomy with an ovary. I'm wondering how old she is. Mm-hmm. Not that it really matters that much. Obviously she's not in menopause, so we could assume she's probably in her 40s somewhere. And I know we are kind of talking about a little bit about the one ovary. Why do you think there'd be, if they're going to take one ovary, why wouldn't they just take both?
Probably, you know, a lot of hysterectomies do happen in the 40s, especially during perimenopause, because that progesterone drops in perimenopause, but the estrogen doesn't. So it creates this sort of over-estrogenized system, which can cause the lining of the uterus to get really thick. So you get the irregular bleeding, heavy bleeding, anemia, can aggravate fibroids. A lot of us have fibroids. We don't even know we have fibroids until they have some kind of symptoms that are warranting that, which usually has to do with too much estrogen feeding it and then causing that bleeding. So I'm thinking something like that. And then because she only has one ovary, they probably took out the other ovary because of a cyst, like you and I have been talking about previous to this, when we were just discussing the question. There was probably some kind of cyst on the ovary. They had to remove the ovary, but because of her age, wanted to keep that one ovary there, because one ovary can work like a champ.
Yeah.
You can even remove part of an ovary and the other ovary and still have it work like a champ.
Well, in some ways, that's where I'm wondering that depending on how old she actually is, maybe that ovary is working a little overtime. It's doing what it's supposed to be doing. That's why it'd be really interesting to see what her actual estradiol level is, to see if it's high enough, because if her body technically does not need the estrogen because she's making enough of her own from the one ovary, it could make her a little nauseated.
That's what I'm thinking for, you know, just to answer Betty's question as a practitioner, I have seen nausea and vomiting with estrogen.
Of course.
I mean, just young women going on birth control, they always warn them, oh, you're going to be nauseous for the first week till your body gets used to it, because it does irritate the lining in the stomach. There are receptors in our stomach and our digestion for estrogen and progesterone. Sometimes, but everybody responds differently. Sometimes the estrogen and progesterone can slow the digestion. It can speed the digestion, can irritate IBS. So it does have an effect on the actual digestion. But it's not that common when you're doing hormone replacement with a menopausal female.
She's doing it transdermally, where birth control is always going to be orally. So you go from an oral, which you could completely understand, but I can see where she's sort of a little bit baffled, because now she's doing it transdermally with the bias. At least we're assuming she's doing it transdermally, right? Because you can still do bias 50-50, 1 milligram. We're assuming that it's transdermal, but
it says cream
right there. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. All right. So I stand corrected. So it is a cream. So birth control would be oral. So that would be an easy one. As you said, that's sort of notorious for causing nausea and vomiting, because it has to go through the liver. Now, technically, it's still being processed in the liver. But when you're kind of bypassing the first pass of the liver by doing it through the skin, which is sort of the point, that's what we always want to do it that way. That's why I thought age-wise, kind of where she is from that production standpoint, that maybe her one ovary, you know, the little engine that could, is actually still doing a job, and she just doesn't need any estrogen yet, except she does mention symptoms, vaginal moisture, mood, good sex. So doesn't mention anything about hot flashes or night sweats. So maybe it is just a vaginal issue. Maybe she doesn't need to do it systemically. She could just do it, you know, vaginally, and she'd be just fine.
You know, I have seen where when someone's in perimenopause, you'll do the blood work. They'll look like they're in menopause. They're having some menopausal symptoms. You do a little treatment, and all of a sudden the ovaries come back into play and they're making their own. That's what I'm kind of suspecting here with Betty's client, is that once she got a little bit of that estrogen, it kind of put some training wheels on that ovary, and then the ovary is processing it on its own.
Yeah.
So then that's why she's having a little bit of that nausea, because it might be a little bit too much estrogen on top of estrogen. So it's creating a little bit of that nausea. And like she said, actually it's debilitating nausea and vomiting.
Oh, it must be pretty bad.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking. So initially I was thinking that bias, 50-50, 1 milligram once a day is going to be 0.5 milligrams of estriol and 0.5 milligrams of estradiol. To be honest, just having done this for a long time, that's not a lot of estrogen.
I mean, 1 milligram, you'd normally think of a 1 milligram dose that's not going to, even at the 50-50.
Once a day, yeah.
Isn't going to really do much as far as causing any negative symptoms. It might not even, I would even think that, granted, a man understanding how a woman works, especially with hormones, and there's a little jump there. I've been doing this a long time, just like you have, but you would think that would be, for the most part, for most women, pretty well tolerated.
Oh, absolutely. And I agree, with Betty, she wasn't having the nausea. She's ruling out the progesterone, because too much progesterone can create some nausea, some lethargy, some fatigue. But she's ruling that out, because I can understand that, because she was having the nausea with the synthetic estrogen, and now she's having it again with this estriol 50-50 combination. I'm honestly thinking probably now would be a time to remove that estrogen from her. And then, like she said, possibly use it vaginally, because that's going to help with the vaginal moisture. That's going to help with, because if your vagina isn't dry and irritated, that can help with great sex. I wouldn't say that using it vaginally would help with mood, because estrogen is amazing for mood. It helps take away that anxiety, that worry, that irritability. It just makes your cup seem, what is it, half full instead of half empty. So estrogen is really great for the mood, but I would take it away, do it vaginally, maybe just do an estriol vaginally, because estradiol does have a tendency to go into the bloodstream, and actually test your hormones, you know, test that follicle stimulating hormone, the LH, the FSH, the LH, the luteinizing hormone, her estradiol, of course, test her progesterone, and see if maybe that one little ovary that's chugging, might be, you know, working hardcore right now.
That's what I think. Just because she didn't tolerate either form, the synthetic one, that doesn't surprise me in the least, depending on what kind of form that was. But the fact that she doesn't tolerate biased, I still think her ovary is probably doing a job. So where would you expect to see? Let's say she does a, you know, you can't, sometimes we send women to the lab on day 12 or day 21. You can't really determine that because of obviously she's had a hysterectomy, so there's no cycle of any sort. So What kind of number would you expect to see if her ovary was still doing something?
Well, that's why I would do an FSH, a follicle stimulating hormone. So the FSH is a signal that comes from the pituitary and monitors overall ovarian status. The FSH I find is a little bit more specific for the estrogen. So that's why I like to do an FSH. So I would do an FSH because that'll give us an idea if that ovary is actually, you know, doing some work, if that's producing some estrogen. So usually I would probably, if it looked like it was around 20, less than 20, for sure that ovary is just making tons of estrogen. If it's under 20, if it's between 20 and 40, I would still think, even though on the reference ranges, on every lab rec you look at, after, you know, 20 to 40 says menopause, it's not. That's really more about perimenopause. Now, if it was up there at 70 to 120, then yeah, that ovary is retired and it's, you know, off to Hawaii or something.
Because she doesn't really tell us how long it's been since the hysterectomy. Yeah, it could be a week, yeah. It could be a month, it could be
a year.
It could be a year.
Yeah, it could be a year.
The further she goes out, the higher that FSH is going
to
go.
And then wouldn't you also do, of course, an estradiol and a progesterone just to see? Because you might get her on day 12, you might get her on day 1, you might get her on day 20, 21. You can't really know.
If she's in fact still cycling.
Yeah. Right. If that ovary is producing hormones. Yeah.
So if she's not cycling, if the ovary is not working, this is the point, right? So if the ovary is not working, then if she tested a couple of times in a month, then there'd be no difference in that number. Mm-hmm. Or at least not a, there'd be maybe a negligible difference, but the number would be relatively the same.
The number of estradiol?
Either estradiol or the FSH.
Yeah, the FSH would be the same. But the estradiol would be, you know, in the 30s or less, you know, 15 to 30, yeah, maybe right. Even less than 15. Then you know that ovary has really, you know, decided to bow out.
Okay, so then let's assume then, just to kind of dive into this question. So if we assume then that her ovary is producing, that's what I think. I think her ovary is still working, which is why she's not able to tolerate such a relative small amount. Mm-hmm. What would you expect to see? So FSH, you would expect to see under, would you say under 20?
Or under probably under 40.
Under 40. Mm-hmm. Okay, then what number would you expect to see on the estradiol then?
Probably be anywhere between 40 to 60. I mean, if it were higher than that, that FSH would be a lot lower. So I would definitely run that. But at the same time, we don't want to just fixate on the hormones. You know, we want to look at her digestion. There's something happening for her to have nausea and vomiting. Now, I don't think she should go down the rabbit's hole and run off to a gastroenterologist and have a lot of testing, because I've done that one time. It was way new in practice. I had a patient that came in with her daughter. She was in her teens and she was having terrible stomach aches, awful stomach aches, nausea, lots of nausea. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, she's just this young kid. I don't want to like overlook something. Let's send her to a GI. Let's get some testing. Really turned out that the nausea was cramps, was uterine cramps. And it was, there was a cyclical, you know, before her period and during her period, she'd have this terrible nausea and stomach aches, but they were really more part of that cramping because she was having such terrible
more
periods.
More of the PMS window as opposed to being some kind of an acute abdomen or something.
I kind of missed that. Yeah, that's what, yeah, exactly. I'm like, this could be serious. This is worrisome.
Yeah, she's going to have appendicitis. She's having some kind of
I could be gallbladder. I don't know. Yeah, it was, this was like almost 20 years ago.
Sure.
But it was, you know, a sign to me to say, okay, let's look at the hormones when someone's having a digestive issue, but at the same time, let's look at the digestion rather than just fixating on the hormones. So I would definitely look into, you know, what might be causing that nausea and vomiting. Is there something with her food? Is there some gallbladder issues? There's a lot of gallbladder issues in women in their late 40s, early 50s.
Especially that ones that have already had the hysterectomy, right? So, you know, what do they say for gallbladder problems? Female fare in 40. I think it's actually, you know, fat as well. I don't want to say that necessarily, but, you know, someone that's maybe put on some weight, female fare, fat, 40, that's like the profile for a gallbladder issues. Gallbladder problems are going to kind of push things up this way because you're On your body, you have your nipple lines, middle of the chest, right a little bit over is what's called Robert's point. So right at the bottom, my name's Robert, right at the bottom of the rib cage, you go over a little bit, halfway between the nipple line and the breastbone is your is Robert's point. That's where the gallbladder is. I know you know that. I'm just saying for everyone listening. And for those of you listening, it's kind of hard to visualize what I just said, but for those of you that are watching, and sometimes gallbladder pain here can refer to the shoulder. It can refer kind of pretty much to the right side. And if she's already had a hysterectomy, we can assume that she's in that profile of having some gallbladder problems. And
we know, you know, previous use of birth control pills, oral estrogen can really aggravate the gallbladder and create
caffeine,
that.
Alcohol, you know, lots of things can put pressure, put a burden on the liver, and then now the liver doesn't work that well.
It could also be a hiatal hernia. You know, people get a lot of nausea and vomiting and heartburn from a hiatal hernia, and they don't even know. So it could be, you know, there could be some other factors that I would definitely delve into, especially since she's so sensitive to that estrogen to cause that nausea and vomiting.
Which is a relatively pretty low dose. Yeah.
So there could be maybe a combination of things. The estrogen could be exacerbating an already digestive, you know, compromise.
Yeah. Now, I would assume though, which he doesn't necessarily say, but I would assume if she is applying the cream and then the nausea vomiting is happening probably within minutes. So they've been able to do
maybe an hour.
Minutes, you know, 30 to 60 minutes, you know, or something like that. So they've been able to deduce every time I put my cream on, I feel this certain way, you know, so I would assume that they've been able to figure that part out, as opposed to, like you said, being food related or something, you know, very specifically GI related.
Yeah.
But still, as you and I being naturopaths, you know, we would certainly kind of look towards the liver in general, right? Doesn't mean there's anything, there's not a diagnosis on the liver. It's just making sure that the liver is functioning properly. Fatty liver disease, you know, gallbladder problems often tend to be liver problems, right? Your liver is sort of inflamed and has stones because the liver isn't working properly. That's why that profile, female, fair, and 40, that's why that's the profile, because they're the ones that ends up with those problems. Men, you know, they don't really have gallbladder problems. They end up getting gout. But relatively,
my dad had both.
But relatively, it's the same issue on the liver. They just manifest in sort of different ways. Men develop gout, and women have gallbladder problems. Now she mentions using, you know, switching it to a vaginal cream. What about the dosage? 0.5 milligrams. What do you think of that?
To be honest, just let's say it's not a digestive issue. It's not the progesterone. It's not anything else. She is in full-blown menopause. Her FSH is real high. Her estrogen is really low. And that it's really, truly that biased 50-50, 1 milligram is causing that nauseum vomiting, the debilitating nauseum vomiting. What I would do is I would reduce that ratio to an 80-20, so 80% estriol, 20% estradiol, because it's most likely the estradiol that would be causing the that irritated stomach, the nausea, where estriol, E3, doesn't have that effect, estradiol does. So I would dial that back, turn it into an 80-20.
At least most of the time anyways. Yeah.
I would turn it into an 80-20.
Well, you wouldn't do just a straight estriol?
No, I would probably, I mean, if she's truly menopausal, that ovary has left the building, her hormones are low, and she is just really sensitive to this dose. This dose is causing her nausea and vomiting. I would switch it to an 80-20 so the estradiol goes down but not completely gone. Mm-hmm. And then because it is technically, when you do it that way, the vaginal tissues don't get as much access when you turn it into, you know, more estriol and less estradiol systemically. If she's putting that cream on, you know, her inner thigh, is then I would do a topical estriol vaginally. I would do that because I don't like to use estradiol vaginally.
Oh, right. Yeah, I wasn't suggesting that. I just thought she would switch it completely because you didn't mention anything about any temperature problems, but she would switch the cream from the bias 50-50 to just a straight estriol and just use it vaginally.
Yeah, because so that would help with the vaginal lubrication.
So you actually would do both.
Yeah, I would do both because we want to work on that vaginal lubrication, the kind of the vaginal resiliency of the tissues. It has more, when you have it vaginally, you can have more blood flow. So that's going to be really good for intercourse. That's going to be good for the vaginal dryness. But she did mention mood. And like I said, estrogen has such a huge impact on mood. We don't want to just blow that off and say, oh, you know, you just have to, you know, which was like, oh, you're a female. Just You got to live with it. You're going to menopause. You just got to deal with
that
it.
I wasn't.
Of course not. You never do that. That's why you're in this industry. That's why you want to help women. You want to advocate. But I would say, do you know, keeping something systemically to help with that mood, because she does specifically say
okay,
mood.
So you're saying to use both. I was just simplifying it just to the vaginal cream. My point was the 0.5 milligrams, but again, she's already established that she's a little sensitive, so maybe it would be best to start at the 0.5 and then she could work up from there.
Yeah.
You know, if need be. Normally, when we do a vaginal cream, an estriol vaginal cream, we have another question about that we're going to get to later. A vaginal estriol cream, normally we do 2 milligrams per application, but in this case, she can't tolerate the one, so it makes sense to go a little bit lower. Now, we usually do it a little bit more frequently vaginally in the first week to 10 days, maybe even the first 2 weeks. And then, like she mentions, I'm using it 3 times a week as sort of maintenance.
For the vaginal tissue.
For the vaginal tissue. Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So that's what I thought. Just switch it to that because, you know, I just figured you'd be limiting the estrogen burden that way, you know, by taking away the bias. But so what would you go down to? You just change the ratio. You just keep it at 1 milligram.
Yeah, probably keep it at that 1 milligram. So it's, you know, 0.2 of the estradiol and then 0.8 of the estriol. I would do it that way. And I would keep working with her. This is a thing with the hormone replacement. And you know this as well as I do, is you have somebody that comes into you. We're pretty good. We can hit the mark, but it's not going to be quite right. We're probably going to have to change the hormones down the road. And then when the body changes, when season changes, when time changes and we're getting older, you're always going to have to readjust that dose. Because I have a lot of patients that ask me, how come you're always readjusting my dose? And I'm like, because you're having symptoms, because it looks different on the blood work. And we're not statues, you know, we're living creatures, you know, yeah. Things change. So I, you know, honestly, Betty, I know you've never seen this before, but you'll see it again, is this would be a good time just to sort of readjust and work with the patient, as long as, you know, the patient is willing to work with you and finding the right dose that's going to fit for her.
Yeah, and just, you know, just to, you know, limit the burden, you know, she says she's going up to 200 milligrams of progesterone. That's, you know, if she's having issues with the estrogen, that's orally or the progesterone, that might be kind of a lot. So she might be better off on, you know, on the lower end, the 100 as opposed to 200, yeah. Because you could assume if she can't tolerate a little estrogen, she might not be able to tolerate the progesterone, but she wasn't using it before when she was prescribed the synthetic estrogen from the gynecologist. So it's a good deduction to assume that it is related to the estrogen somehow.
Yeah, I would say, and then you make up a good point about that progesterone. Progesterone is also really good for the mood. It's good for sleep. 100 milligrams is pretty much like a size medium. That's a good dose.
That's standard, yeah.
That's a pretty standard. That's what I take every night, but I might end up raising that because my hormones are changing. But
I think you need to increase it.
But I do. Okay.
you need a little bit more progesterone. You've been a little irritable lately. You need some more progesterone. I think I need some progesterone. I think I'm a little irritable too sometimes. We're just teasing.
Let me finish what I was going to say.
Sorry.
I wouldn't, because she says 100 to 200 milligrams, just when you're doing static dosing especially with that progesterone, is don't change it. It could even be something with that. You don't want to take 100 milligrams tonight and, oh, I feel like, you know, I need to take 200 tomorrow and then I'm going to go back to 100. That's just too much up and down. If you're going to keep that static dosing, I would either keep it at 100 or maybe in her case, 125, 150, 200.
Right.
Don't go changing that, because that's changing the equation, our variables in our equation, and we won't be able to pinpoint exactly what's causing that nausea, vomiting.
Right, right. Now, for a menstruating woman, we often will cycle progesterone between a lower dose and a higher dose, but they're menstruating, and their body usually sort of determines that, because in a woman's cycle, like her real cycle, when she's producing hormones on her own, the first 2 weeks of her cycle, from period to ovulation, she's producing no progesterone anyways. So it is sort of a little bit kind of unnatural to give a woman progesterone all month long, but they usually feel better that way. They sleep better, they have less anxiety, they have less irritability. That's why you give them less in the first half of the month and more of the month, and then more in the second half as they're
getting
getting closer to that PMS window, the 7 days or so before their period starts. But you know, these are all just the nuances of hormone replacement, and you know, that's why it is very difficult to do it in a cookie cutter fashion. You cannot have 3 doses and expect that to fit for all women. It just does not work that way.
No.
I mean, we should just start it off from the beginning, because there is that's why it's sort of shocking and stunning that, you know, blood pressure, cholesterol, okay, you got 3 doses, everyone gets one of those 3 doses and you're good. Hormone replacement does not fit into that box. Mm-mm. It's a lot more complicated than that.
Nope, I completely agree. Sorry, I was thinking with
and,
the dog.
And petting the dog.
Trying to pet the dog and
the co-host, over there. Yeah. It's sort of like second nature. Like you don't even really think about it. Because
we need like a little stand for her to sit on.
Oh, Jesus. It's a little embarrassing spoiled. That the dog is there. No, she's becoming part of the show, but, you know, that's fine. Who cares? It is what it is. It's still cute, so we don't really worry about it too much. So I think we've kind of beat this one to death in a good way. I think that there's always, that's why the questions, we appreciate everyone. If you go to our website, Ask the Doctor, that's where this one came from. So Betty had took the time to go to our website, fill out her name and email, put in her question, because it gives the language that you're, as the audience, are using. And it just, honestly, I find this enjoyable to kind of break these down and come up with our own, you know, sort of what would we do in these kind of situations. We don't really prepare for these ahead of time. We just kind of sit down and do them. Oh, granted, we read it and decide which ones we want to use because we do get a lot of questions. We try to get to them all, but there's, you know, sort of too many to keep up with. So if you have a question and you're interested, either in the comments down below if you're watching on YouTube, or as I mentioned, you can go to our website, progresshealth.com. Up at the top, there's a little tab that says Ask the Doctor. Like I said, just enter your name and email and we'll get to your questions. Compliments go a long way. You know, a little complimentary bribery might get your question answered. We appreciate it nonetheless. It's really great to have a little conversation back and forth.
Nope. This has been great.
Yeah. So any final comments or questions about Betty's client? Or are we okay for now?
I think we're good.
Okay. Until next time, I'm Dr. Mackey.
And I'm Dr. Davidson.
Take care. Bye-bye.